Hello, we're on the air. This is Bright Lights Pathfinder Show with Kathy Cook. Tonight my star host is Robbie Thomas. He's an accomplished world-renowned best-selling author, screenwriter, producer, and a psychic criminal profiler. Robbie has actively worked with different law enforcement agencies and his families and their families internationally on murders and missing person cases. Robbie has three other books out that have been published over the years and contribute the three others, such as award-winning screenwriter Gloria Shepherd, bestseller Brian Jones, Straight from the Heart, and The Rolling Stones Murder. Robbie has worked with many integral individuals within the paranormal community, and he has starred in critically acclaimed hit movies such as The Sally House and Dead Whisper. Robbie is also known as his outstanding professional motivational speaker that he is, as an expert in the metaphysical, spiritual, and paranormal industry. With over 20 years' experience, Robbie's credibility is not only for the work with law enforcement, but within the film and television industry as well, which keep him very busy with all types of work. Robbie has been featured in magazines worldwide, Nobles, and will be the Paranormal Magazine in England, Unexplained Paranormal Magazine in the United States, Haunted Time Magazines in the United States, Silent Voices in England. Robbie, I'm going to continue going on, or do you want to step in because you've got so much to tell about yourself?
Hello.
Hey, Robbie Thomas.
Oh, I was sitting there going, oh, my God, I feel old now, all that list of stuff.
Well, we've known each other since the before time anyway, so we are pretty old.
Yeah, you know, the years go by real quick, don't they?
They do, don't they? I tell you, it's great to hear your voice, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I would love for you to just tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world today.
Oh,
wow. Tell us about paranormal encounters.
Yeah, paranormal encounters. It took quite a while to write that book, and I put 20 years of my life into it. It's all encounters throughout North America, just not America, but Canada included. You know, you have the Al Capone Speakeasy in Chicago. You have the Mantino State Hospital in Illinois, the Studebaker Mansion in Indiana, Perryville Battlefield in Kentucky. So it's a variance of different places that were investigated, filmed, worked with very integral individuals such as the leading EVP specialist of the world, Michael Esposito. He's the only individual I know who's signed to a recording deal through Touch Records in England for frequency and sound. He worked in the American PSYOPs in the Iraqi War. So his background is very integral.
That is wonderful here.
Yeah. So in the book itself, there's a lot. There's a culmination of many different stories that and pictures. There's pictures in the book as well throughout the places that we visited. And I worked with 14-time award-winning film producer Ronald James, Margaret Wendt, you know, just sort of notables that are in the book, Christopher O'Brien, great people, just great people. And, it's based on all factual events of contacting the other side.
Robbie, this is just amazing. You know, we have always wondered exactly, there's so many questions I have. Let's get out what all you're doing first, and then I'll question you about so many things. You have something coming up in October?
Yes, not this October coming, but the following October, the 11th, 2011. We just did a paranormal conference a couple of weeks ago, and in 2011 we stepped it up, moved it to Halloween. We have everybody coming from A&E, Sci-Fi Channel. I can't mention the names right now because we're going to hold it until we release the website itself, goes
Understood.
Live. But we do, great culmination, again, of the variants of the paranormal field itself, from UFO expert to the Ouija board expert to, you know, just your ghost hunter, but, you know, who's been on sci-fi and in, you know, several movies. best-selling authors will be there. It's going to be great.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you go about an investigation or how you get put on a scene, because I see that you've done missing persons cases with, murder missing person cases, and you work closely with a lot of policemen. And they even ask you to come on board, I heard, the police force, you know, to help work with them. What I want to know is how you get to, can you just walk us through a stage of like the two-year-old, the little girl that was missing?
Yeah, Victoria Stafford. She was an eight-year-old little girl, blonde-haired little girl who went missing about 45 minutes from my home and about an hour away from my house here.
Goodness.
And, you know, it's touching because when it involves children, you want to help out as much as possible. And my workload is heavy. I mean, I do have about a year to year and a half worth of cases on my desk, and it's tough. So being in touch with the family and the detectives in the case, you meet with them, you give them your profile. I call it a profile. And which will stipulate who I feel is involved in the case. And in this instance, we had a woman leading Victoria away from the school. And as the woman was leading Victoria away from the school, that's the evidence they had that it was a blur, but they knew it was a woman. I went in and I criminally profiled a man and a woman. They couldn't place the man, and they kept telling me no. And I said, yes, there's a man involved. And this is what he would look like. This is what he would wear on any given day. This is the type of work he would do, his characteristics, and then to his mental state. The pictures that came in would be automatic hand drawings of where her body was, the laneway with the big pile of rocks, the wagon wheels, and the horse-drawn buggies, which turned out to be a Mennonite Amish-type village area. The buggies would pass right by her body that was laying in the tree line. So when you stipulate and I give the profile and I give it to them, then they ask the questions and we go through all the evidence. And then they try to think outside the box because they think inside the box looking at the parameters of, you know, is mom involved? And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but they planted me in the mother's house. I was there for about a half an hour and just collectively getting a feel for the mother and the involvement in the home. And, you know, because I did tell the father's side of the family she was involved. And so sitting in the house, the feeling I did get was there was a collaborative there. There was some type of connection. And sure enough, the woman who led the little girl away from the school was in the home at one time.
Wow, Robbie. I know that that's very emotional for you, I'm sure. To be able to have to pick up all these type of feelings and it's so sensitive, you know, to work with. The understanding that I have is that you use all your senses, your intuitional senses, as well as your logical side, being able to place these all together. Do you collect this material and then hand it to the police, or do you work, you know, just step by step, or?
Yeah, I tend to work and grab all the information in a systematic way. The little boy who was murdered in Louisville, Kentucky, went missing. I got a phone call from a liaison in Kentucky. I'm in Canada. They sent me a picture. So I'm doing remote viewing off the little boy's picture. I ask him for the monster's name or the murderer's name, and he gives me the name Cecil. So I write Cecil, I draw the picture that the little boy showing me of the man involved, and then he shows me stadium lights, and they're off and not far away. So I draw the stadium lights, and I put off, dark, not far away. Then he shows me the construction in front of the house of the murderer's home. And so I talk about the gas lines and the flags and the men in the orange vest that were working in front of the house. And then when we put it together and we pieced it together, if you stood on the front porch of the murderer's home, and you look through the clearing, there was Papa John's Stadium was right there. The stadium lights, everything was right there. The murderer's name was Cecil, and we captured him. It was December 6, 2007. He's on death row for the murder of little Caesar Ivan Cannell.
My goodness. That is amazing, Robbie, that you are able to help in such a traumatic way. It's like, to me, when you were talking about it just now, I saw pieces of like a there for the case, and then you just unfold the pieces and gently put them together for them.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. That's what I saw. And also, what about Brian Jones, the founder of the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, that's a very interesting case. I worked on that for about a year and a bit with award-winning screenwriter Gloria Shepherd. I come off a case of finding a gentleman alive. Was called up by a major radio station production company, and their producer went missing. They had someone they were using prior to saying he was shot in a hotel room in Florida. So Hamilton County, Florida police issued a missing persons report, and they were looking into hotels where this gentleman would have been shot or killed. And I told him, no, he's alive. He'll call you in 3 days, and he's mad because he got passed up for a promotion. They kind of laughed at that and scoffed at it because they had someone else who was on television as well saying that he was shot and dead and what have you. Well, 3 days later, they did get a phone call. They issued a statement and, you know, thanked me for helping them and what have you. From that case, the Brian Jones case came directly off the back of that one. And when I was referred to her, she called me up, and the family of Brian Jones and also the detective or the private eye who was involved in the case was got Gloria Shepherd involved, and so then they got me involved. Working that case was quite different. Not only were we trying to grab evidence, but at the same time, she was writing a book. And looking back at that, when we decided to go through the motions of finding material or evidence of Brian Jones and what could we get, they came up with three letters that were sealed by Brian Jones back then that were never opened. We found them. So his DNA were still on those letters. Back a couple years ago or
like handwritten letters? Or letters like initials or?
No, they were handwritten letters.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, handwritten letters. So back in about a year and a half ago, they were telling me that Julian, which was Brian Jones' son. Now, a lot of people might know, a lot of people don't know that Julian came from, back then they called the girls concubines. So mm-hmm. His concubine married Donovan Leach.
What's a concubine?
Pardon me?
What is a concubine?
Well, the way it was told to me from Gloria and in the research was she was a member of, you know, a lover of Brian Jones, but also a lover of the rest of the Stones. And
oh, I understand. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in looking at all the... again, the evidence, what we came forward, we had three letters we found. So Julian was to come forward and do a DNA test, and then as they opened the letters up, we would see what was inside them from his last days of his life. There was things that we were channeling that the public don't know, and how Brian Jones was held down and his, you know, just like things like his crotch was cut open with a knife, and how he was, you know, stayed in a hotel, and they put him there. And,
so you see do you see it as a movie moving, or do you see it as like just frames just coming across your third eye, or and then get the feeling from there? Do you see the whole graphic visual movie of what happened? Do they show you that, or?
No, it's like I'm actually right there.
Okay.
You know, here's a real good one, and I know Don, he's listening in. I remember sitting with Don. And Don, just before we were...
From BBS Radio, or who?
Yeah, Don from BBS Radio.
Okay.
Now, we were going to do the Natalie Holloway case. And Don says to me, I'm bringing this producer aboard, and we're going to film this thing. And we're going to go and keep documentation of this. And he couldn't think of the guy's name. And, you know, it was just played out. Like, I could see what he was talking, and it was like me being there. And I said, what is the producer's name, Ronald James? And I just pulled that out of the air. And sure enough, he goes, that's the guy's name. Sure enough, it was Ronald James. That was his name. So it's like being played out. I'm there. I see what goes on. A lot of people describe it as a movie or a snapshot or something going across the third eye, or, you know,
like in a dream. Yes, what I'm seeing, Robbie, is what is like you trance out there. You do it like a trance out there, and you disassociate from yourself and into that scene, basically. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. I call it tunnel vision. And
okay.
Not television, but tunnel vision. And I become part of the situation. When I go into doing a murder case or other things, it's like the last case we did in Ohio with the U.S. Marshals. I was down there and working a case, and the family members were all in front sitting down in chairs. And Jeff Broughton, the U.S. Marshal, had his case beside him. And I had to come up with evidence of what would lead to the fact of how Robert was murdered. So I started, you know, seeing what he was showing me. It was like I was there. I seen the floorboards. I seen the floor. I seen the area. I know where the gun was. So when I started to explain about the gun and the floorboards, the family kind of gasped for air, like, you know, like, ah. And when the mother came forward with her sister, they said that night that Robert was murdered, the next morning, the wife of him, being Robert, tore up all her floorboards, and they put all new flooring down.
So, really?
So, you know, one and one goes in hand, and it was just unbelievable to hear that, and so it just validated everything we needed to hear.
My gosh, Robbie, you've got quite credentials that are just, I've watched you for what, 11 years we've known each other, 10, 11 years. And I just, it's amazing that the perception, because you disassociate to me, Robbie, if I think of Robbie Thomas, when I hear your name, which is world renowned, it's universal, everybody knows Robbie Thomas, I feel that you are right on the money, almost like a bloodhound that can just pick up a scent, and then you just zoom in on it. You don't even second guess. You just do it. Because I was wondering, if you second guess anything, or if you doubt yourself, or, you know, it would mar it up. But you are very precise. You are very consistent. You are very strict with yourself, very perfectionistic with yourself as well. And I know that so many of us are, from the old days, are so honoredly proud that you continued on your path, that you continued to get out there, and you would stop by and we would have round robins, and, you know, and you would teach in the chat rooms a lot, you know, helping people get started on their path. But Robbie, what I want to know is, how in the world did you have time to put all these books together, from Signs from Heaven to You and From Spirit, A Link to Heaven's my favorite. I can't wait to get a hold of Robbie Thomas's Paradox, The Gates from Hell. And then you also have, gosh, there's just so many. Sally House. Oh, wow. I remember when you did the Sally House. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Sally House movie. It was pretty amazing. Back in 2006, after Dead Whisper came out, I was to go down to Atchison, Kansas to film the Sally House. Now, I was visited, and it wasn't a premonition. I was visited, like a lot of people do understand what visitation is when someone stands in your bedroom, but some people have never had the experience of having a live visual visitation. And she was standing there, and she told me not to go, and she explained what was going to happen with New Dominion Pictures, Discovery Channel, again, was 14-time award-winning film producer Ronald James, Michael Esposito, and a few other crew members, and myself. And we're flying in from all over Canada and the United States to head to Atchison to do this movie. I decided to stay home and take what Spirit told me because I always listen. And I explained to each individual what would happen to each one and who was going to do what, and it was going to be a mess. So the producer was yelling at me, telling me to get down there, and I didn't leave. So
can you give me some examples of what, you know, just give me an example of what you told one of the people, you know, that was going to happen?
I told Michael McDowell he wouldn't even set foot into the home. There'd be too much ego going on, and people would not let him come in. And he traveled from Indiana to Kansas. He listened to what I said. His girlfriend said, take heed to what he's telling you, and he still went down there. And his reply to me on the phone on the way back was, you were right. I never even got a chance to set foot into the home. Ronald James called me up on the phone and left a message on my answering machine saying, okay, Mr. Psychic, you're right, and, you know, this is what happened. Tens of thousands of dollars are all gone now from the shoot. We didn't film anything. What a waste of money. And so, you know, looking at that, I stayed home. I thanked the Spirit for what Spirit did for me, and it was really funny. I went on a Power Spirit tour a year later in 2007, all through the United States, from New Orleans, Kentucky, Indiana, Michigan, all over. And so Michael Esposito says, why don't you stop down in Kansas and do a tour stop? I said, okay, fine, I'll do it. I added it to the list. He says, come on by the Sally House. We'll do a private little thing, and we'll go through there. You can finally see the place. I said, okay, fine. I'd not, you know, knowing of the date, and it never clicked or dawned on me. But when we arrived, I brought actor Jamie Routley, who starred with Nick Mancuso, Oliver Levy, Roddy Piper, and Blind Eye, and Billy Owens 1 and 2. He was a drama horror actor, and I brought him down. He wanted to see what the paranormal was all about. We're sitting on the porch in Atchison, Kansas, and Michael says, you know the date? And I said, yeah, and I told him, and he goes, yeah, it's a year to the very day that you were supposed to film the Sally House last year. Oh, my gosh, how coincidental is that?
Robbie, gosh, it makes you wonder if there is any coincidences in life, you know? But I want to give the active listening audience a little bit about what Sally House is.
The Sally House is a movie based on the lives of a family who lived in this home who were attacked by spirit, supposedly. Now, Unsolved Mysteries did a bit on them. They were on TV a couple times in the 90s where Tony Pickman was actually sitting in a chair, and red markings would come across his chest as the filming was filming. So I was asked to go there and try to debunk this. And I went in there, and, I didn't debunk the fact that there's spirits, but there was really no malevolent force there. People right. flew in from all over the United States, all over Canada, to come and watch the filming. I remember the newscasters the day after we arrived, and we were all over the news. We had people showing up from Missouri, from Mississippi, and they're all across the way, and it was all taped off, and it was nice meeting everybody, and it was fantastic. But, you know, everybody in the folklore of this home that's supposed to be the most dangerous home in America, or the most, you know, infamous home, I found it to be, you know, pleasant. So did everybody else who went in the home. Did we encounter spirit? Yeah, we encountered quite a bit of spirit in different forms of different people. I don't think it was malevolent. And I don't like using the word think. I know it wasn't malevolent.
Right.
You know, you hear me talking on film, and over above me, you hear them talking and, like, conveying their messages as corresponding with me. And it was amazing.
Well, to me, I'm going to ask you this. It's been pondering on me for quite a while. My dad passed, and you told me about my dad back in 2005 and how to connect with him, which I am so ever for grateful for that because of your lessons in teaching me how to connect with my dad. He was the first one that ever passed that I really was so tight with. But to me, I've always wanted to know, do spirits reside in the same place for you know, like renting it or leasing it or do they move on, or do more spirits come to that particular place?
Yeah, I know. We're all free will. And being free will and free spirited, we come and go. Now, Michael Esposito, again, you know, one of the leading scientific individuals in the world, and I'm happy and honored to be able to work with him. You know, we've had this conversation about residual energy and quantum physics and spirit side of things. Now, you know, in working with all the different integral people in the field and getting their take on things and then, you know, relaying the messages of, you know, what I know and what I see, a good one would be if somebody committed suicide, are they trapped here? Do they go to a dark corner?
That is God a really great them? Point. We've been wanting to know that.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I've worked with clergy. And one of my books, I was willed by spirit, and the Vatican got involved. You know, I've had a lot of, like I said, you know, talking to a lot of people over the years, from clergy to bishops and what have you. It's the fact of the matter is we tie ourselves here. We become the catalyst of being the anchor, if you will. So we're not the ones that are moving on. We're holding ourselves down. Our loved ones are free. God never forsakens anyone. And the people that we love go instantly to heaven or greeted by family members or, you know, who commit suicide. I had a friend of mine commit suicide. His name was Michael. And my mother brought him through. And when he came to me, he said he's learning to love himself again. And he's learning to love life once more. So this was his way of graduating or moving forward in life, and he's being taught on the other side. You know, a good segue from this is going to my very first book. I wrote the foreword. Now, usually you
name
have another,
the book. What's the book?
A Link to Heaven, Chats with the Other Side.
Okay.
Now, usually you have an author or someone else write your foreword for you. I ended up writing this foreword, and it was shown to me what heaven is, and we are but the footstool to what is to come. And when I was shown, and it was like a vision again, and they told me to turn back and look, and I seen all the monumental buildings and how reverent they were and man-made and the synagogues and the temples and the churches. You know, that's great. That is a figure part of what we are to know and to guide ourselves on while we live here. Now, to turn back and look into the courtyard of where it was like there was no ending, there was no beginning. And everything, everywhere, and all around was me and about me and in me. And that's how it felt. I was met by a woman. She explained to me everything that was happening, seen the people milling about, who was teaching who, how they were loving individuals who were hurt or, like, again, committed suicide, and teaching them and moving forward and what have you. So this is what heaven, or this is what paradise, or this is what the other side is. Do we have choice to come back? Absolutely. You know, reincarnation, the reincarnates know this. So when we talk about the fact of here and there, you know, we do not just become stuck in one place, or, you know, we're trapped in this home, or we become a committed suicide victim so that now we're going to live in torment for the rest of our lives and we're put into purgatory. It doesn't happen like that. The scriptures, and I've talked to clergy and I've explained that to them, and they turn to me and they agree that, you know, the scriptures and what has been written is man-made. It's not that from the hand of God. It's from the man's hand himself.
It's interesting that you said the footstool, because that is in the Bible, where Jesus puts his foot on the earth as a footstool. And I want to just say, back when my father passed and you were talking with me, Dad came to me and he said that our spirits that we have today, well, alive, and how others perceive us of what and how they have treated us and how we've treated them, that part is what lives in the earthly realms, but our soul's going on to heaven and to the heaven bounds. But Dad told me, he said, I've got to make it right with you for you to understand why I always told you, you just don't listen. Or why, and then I said, well, now Dad's become my listener, you know, I listen to his spiritual words that he, his wisdom that he left here on earth. And that's why I can hear and see, it's his spirit he had bestowed upon me. And I can feel him in different areas and different places. But Robbie, what my question is hearing audio, the spirits. Now, that is a fine line between people wondering if they are really hearing voices or if, do you know what I'm saying? Or if it's an illness, because, to me, if a spirit or a spirit that you come in contact with tells you what to do and you do it, then that's an illness. But it, you know, I'm saying like, go across the street, run through the traffic, you know, that kind of thing. But if you listen actively with discernment, then you can get the lessons because the spirit is here to help us. The spirit is here to, that's what I gathered with my dad coming to me. I never actually heard his voice. It was like a telepathy thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. We set out on the premise of making Dead Whisper after coming off the attempt of Natalie Holloway, and it was going to be called Ghost and Legends. So I wanted to bring the premise of, does my mom really hear me? Am I hearing what my mother's saying? Is this true? We filmed it. And in the film, it's a first time ever in correlation, direct communication with a medium. Not just saying, who's here? And then they say, who's here? And then they go on to the next question. But what it was you see me sitting down in a room, and you have an individual, and the cameras are rolling, and they say, what's your favorite time of year, Adam? Because I said, Adam's here. And Adam would say, Christmas. Now, you take the whole sentence, what I just said, what's your favorite time of year, Adam? When we speak, it spikes on a lab computer system. Our voices spike. When they talk, it's like a vacuum, and it sucks in. It goes reverse. So you
really
hear him. It's amazing. And so that's the validation throughout the conversation and we had on film. And I would hear him say Christmas, and you hear him say Christmas, and then you hear the tape go click, and you hear me say Christmas. I repeat what he says. And then we go on throughout the film, and we talk more with different spirits, and they're all caught on film talking back and forth. So what I hear, what they're not hearing in the room is what I'm hearing, and we're capturing it on film, and I'm saying what they're hearing, so it's a validation of the other side speaking.
That is such good information, Robbie. You have validated so many things that I'm sure so many active listening audiences need to hear. Tell me why something would be haunted. What causes, what is a haunting?
People make it a haunting.
Okay.
I know there's, you know, I've been in places where doors are slamming, ceiling fans are going fast, and, you know, there's shadows going on the wall. We did this one in the book, Paranormal Encounters, that's out right now. I brought one of the radio stations from the local town into this place. It was the very first time it was ever an interactive, live paranormal investigation where people could call in and we would talk while I'd go through the different rooms and trying to speak to the spirits who were there. This happened in 2004. Now,
let me ask you a question before you go. Did the spirits, how do you keep them from all talking at one time?
It's amazing. Sometimes you can hear the calamity that goes on. I'll give you, for instance, the one woman was so upset that she was murdered back in 1920 in the house. She was doing sinister laughs and creating barking noises of like dogs, like they sounded like real dogs on all the audible that was all set up all around and throughout the house. Noises you cannot recreate on a computer or recreate on any instrument. I mean, it was like watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon where it was going pating, patoing, and really weird noises that was happening. And in the background, you hear the doors are slamming, and you hear the voices. And then finally, I just said, you know, you were murdered here. We understand. And then you hear her crying. and then everything stops. It's like it's come to a lull, and you hear her muffling cry, and then all of a sudden you hear the truth. You hear her say that. Now that's captured, and that's on microtape. So it's not a digital recorder. It's on real analog. It's amazing what was captured on film and what have you. But, you know, looking at the aspect of finally saying, this is a haunting, it's malevolent forces, no, it's not. It's somebody who wanted answers, and you want to show them compassion. So when we did that...
Let me ask you, before you go any further, if one has gone to heaven or onto the other side, their spirit is what is communicating with you, correct?
That's right.
And they, in the other side, are learning to cope in a different manner. Daddy told me there was 7 layers to heaven. I don't know. But to be able to help teach, like you're saying, to the others that hurt with murder, with a suicide or whatever. But the spirit that you're communicating with is what they had transposed or gone through in their life, right?
Right. It's you or me on the other side.
Right.
Right. And now people are listening to the date I gave, 1920, and they're thinking, well, she's been dead for all that time. Why can't she move on? People have to realize 1920 till now has only been like 2 minutes on their side.
Oh, my gosh, I didn't think of that, Robbie. What about the things moving in a house? You know that movie, I know this is crazy, but I'm going to use hypothetically the movie Ghost. You know, how he moved the penny and stuff. Can that happen? I mean, is that real? Have you ever encountered things moving about?
Oh, like I said, doors slamming. Things flying off.
Trying to give you a message, like handing you something or showing you something, you know. Because to me, I see you working in a house right now, and it's like they're guiding you to another area, and then it pinpoints something for you. You know, how do you know when it's the spirit working with you and compared to your intuition and your instincts?
I was on the phone to an individual. I can't remember his name right now. I apologize. And I'm talking about a girl who was hung 50 feet from the police station outside of Toronto. And I mentioned her name, Alicia McMaster. And as soon as I mentioned her name, the light beside me come on. So I looked at it, my wife looked at it, and I told the individual on the other line that, you know, we're talking about stuff like this. This happens regularly. I'm just going to explain that the light just came on. He goes, that's amazing. I said, yeah, I'm going to turn it off. Hang on a second. I turn it off, and then we go on to talk about the case again. And I hit a soft point in the case where I wanted to look a little deeper into it because it's foul play. And I mention an individual's name, and the light come on. So she's directing me, saying more or less, yes, this is right, I'm here.
Wow, isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
The communication and how they're letting you know is amazing.
It is. And, you know,
I have goosebumps. I've got goosebumps everywhere. As excited as I can be.
I got a video of Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence. There was a TV show was on for 3 years where they were trying to solve cold case murders, and it had a ghost tinge to it. Well, he was down here 2 years ago or a year ago, and I had a conference. We went to a place where it was haunted, and I explained to them 32 years or 33 years ago, this was my very first paranormal experience, and it was back in 1977. So I went through the whole scenario about the place, and I named the lady. So we all go into the building. He's got this voice box where they actually talk over, and I got the film footage of it. It's amazing. It's actually on my Facebook. I will show it to you. I will send it to you, and you can take a look.
Say it.
He's talking, and he says, "Are you the maid?" And you hear a little bit of crispy, you know, crackling, and all of a sudden you hear her say, "Could be." And then he says, what is your name? And you hear a little bit of crackling, and she goes, "Tess." And I told everybody her name was Tess prior to going in, because I met up with her in 1977. And I got a photograph of her, actually, back in from 1978, where there was no digital cameras. It was all real film. And you see her in the left-hand side, and it's amazing. It's a full apparition. Yeah, so do they communicate? Absolutely.
Well, that comes to me asking this question. What is exactly an orb?
You know, myself, I've been around a lot of people who, you know, look at this orb, look at that orb, and I've been around people who are experts at orbs. And the take of everything is 99.9% of all orbs are either dust, moisture, bugs, some
raindrops, yeah.
You know, something on the lens, because people don't understand. When they buy a camera, you're just not buying a camera and the shutter speed. You can set your shutter speed, and sometimes your shutter speed isn't set properly. So either the film is moving faster than the shutter is moving faster than the film, or vice versa. Digital cameras suck light in from behind you, above you, around you. You know, there's a lot of different, and you know all about cameras. So,
yeah, I asked you about which camera to buy.
I know. And,
get
you know,
some good input, Robbie.
But, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, from little cameras to, you know, these big high-tech cameras, I always tell people, go buy that $5.99 film camera that you get at the store that's disposable, and that's the best type of camera you can buy to go on a ghost hunt.
A 35mm. Robbie,
that's
you
it.
Said one time to me when I was questioning some pictures that I had, and you looked at them for me, you said that the orbs have color to them, mostly if they're a real true blue, the 1% orb, that it would be colorful, like a fun color.
Yes, and the way I meant that was, if they're in color, I got a film footage, too, and this is really cool. Of that place I told you where the doors were slamming, my assistant was walking by. I'm on a live show. I'm in another room talking with the radio announcer and one of the TV guys going through. Now, there's a camera set up, and the camera's catching her snapping pictures of the stairwell. And as she walks away from the stairwell, there's a solid softball-size orb. I mean, it was solid white, and there's not, you can't see through it. It's like, it looked like a softball coming out of the wall. It came out of the wall real slow and went right towards her. It turned right and it went right down the hallway and then zoomed in left into the wall. You know, that is a true entity or spirit form or taking form, as an orb, that type of thing.
Okay. What are the little blue dots or lights that people see sometimes? The little indigo little sparks.
You know, Christopher O'Brien says to me one day, in Colorado, I'm trying to remember where it is. It's Colorado or New Mexico. I think it's New Mexico. There is a mountain range. And on top of this mountain range, the government protects this culture that apparently a lot of people don't know of, and they're little pygmies. And on top of that, he was able to get into there one time to be able to interview and talk to these people, and he couldn't get right into the village because he's not allowed, but they took him to this one little sacred area, and these little lights come out of the sky, and they dance all around. He says, Rob, I have my hand out, and they were bouncing all over my hand, my arms, and he says, I said, they're fireflies. He says, no, they're not fireflies. They were lights. They went through my hand, through my arms, and it was amazing when he was telling me.
I'm asking you this because one day when I was doing an interview, and it was about somebody that had passed, a blue little thin long line came in through the between my blinds, you know, where the blinds don't hit the lip of the window all the way, came straight through, landed at my feet, stayed there until I was finished with the client, then popped out through the side of the blinds. I was just like, whoa.
Yeah. Amazing. Spirit has many forms, and that's one thing in the genre of the paranormal. You know, Keith H. see me on TV. Keith H. is the host of Spooked on the Sci-Fi Channel, and Keith is a great buddy of mine.
I'm aware of him, but I don't know him personally.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Great guy. He's been in the parent. We call him the grandfather, if you will. He's been around for a long, long time. Now, he seen me about 10 years ago on a TV program I did up here in Canada. It was shown satellite through all Canada. And he calls me up, and we were talking. And he says, you know, I can put on my right hand, Rob, how many paranormal teams there are in America. And he goes, you know, there's not that many out there. And, you know, it's funny, 10 years later, there's thousands of everybody. In,
I know. What's the deal? But you have got a style about you, Robbie, that backs you up completely in everything that you do. You know, that is something that you've got your credentials. You know, it's just like who you are, and you've got proof for everything that you've encountered. One other question I've got several. You're going to have to come back and visit on BBS Radio with us another time, because there's so many questions and we haven't even opened the calls. But I want to know, everybody wants to know about the Ouija board.
I was sitting with Loretta Lynn's brother, and Loretta Lynn, a lot of people, some people do know, she's a good, you know, friend. I've talked to her on the phone, and Patsy Lynn, and I got down to Van Leer, Kentucky, just this past little bit ago. I was doing a murder case down there, so I got to meet Herman, her brother, and he was talking with me at the very first home, Loretta Lynn, Crystal Gale, and what have you. He still owns it. It's there. And he took me through it, and we're sitting down on the front porch, and he goes, you know, I sat down by the stairwell one day, and I leaned, and this trap door kind of opened up, and I reached inside and put out this Ouija board, and he goes, it kind of spooked me.
Yeah, you're told not to touch him is what I've always heard.
Yeah. And so he goes, I tried to set the thing on fire, and it wouldn't burn. So he says, I took it, and I chopped it up, and I put it down and dug a hole and threw it in there. And he goes, I got back home, and sitting there, and about a couple weeks later, I decided to, you know, go hit the door again and open up and see what else was there. So he says, he hit the door, opened it up, and he goes, dang it. He says, I reached in, pulled out. He says, it was a darn Ouija board was back there.
No way!
Yeah, and this fella's like 70-some late years old, and, you know, he's not lying. He's looking right me in the eye, and I'm going, oh, my gosh.
Well, I've heard that it opens portals. And you do have to explain what portals are, but when people mess with a Ouija board, then that opens portals to their, you know, contact, and that's what's so ooh about them.
Yeah. A good friend of mine.
Because we don't know what we're messing with, and you shouldn't mess with something that you don't know how to do it.
Yeah, you know, that's true. A very good friend of mine, Bobby Murch, he owns one of the oldest museums in America with all the Ouija boards that you can think. I'm actually bringing him up.
Types.
There's tons.
Really?
There's all kinds. You know,
I did not know that.
Oh yeah. Oh, amazing Ouija board collector he is, and he's got the biggest museum of them. We discuss it once in a while, and you know, my old thinking in ways is this: if you lend something power, it's going to get power. If you do not, it's not going to happen.
We're going to wrap this up in a minute, but I just have to tell you, when I was growing up till age 13, my mother's side of the family, they would have seances. They put the veils over their head, and they had the Ouija boards, the crystal balls, everything you can say, a big black book. I would ask what it was, and they'd be reading it. It looked like a scribble to me. But literally, the table would rise off the ground with no, I was only, you know, up to probably age 5 to 13, and it would literally come up off the ground. And I don't understand that, and I don't understand how come my fingers would be on the, you know, the Ouija board, and it would move all around by itself. You know, yeah. But those are the questions I have. Well, because I was so young, I didn't know what was going on. I thought it was a game.
Right. My grandmother used to have tarot cards, and I used to play with them and just say, look, you know, look at the pretty bird, and, you know, and look, and I used to stack them up and make houses out of them.
Did too.
Yeah, it was, you know, just fun, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I look at the instruments that are out there, and that's why I call them instruments. The catalyst is you. The instrument is the tool by which you perform or bring forward any information or what have you. It's not grandeur or illusion. It's true. It truly does happen. You know, just like the instrument of holding a child's piece of clothing and telling the mother and the father and the police that, you know, this is where her body is. It's a catalyst, and you are the abundant of information that is being drawn to it. So the Ouija board would, in a sense, be the same thing. You are giving it power by...
And giving it will to move.
Exactly. So somehow, they're wanting to communicate. Now, I'm going to let a little surprise out on the radio show right here at the end. I work with, again, scientific individuals, the head inventor for IBM. He'll be here tomorrow in my hometown. He's invented this MF typewriter. Now, we're
what
going
is
to
an first... MF typewriter?
He's explained it to me. I've seen it work. And what it does is if the spirit can speak through me and we catch spirit on film saying exact same wording I'm saying, he wants to put it where the visual will be on screen and they can type out exactly what they're saying. So it's amazing how it works. And it's phenomenal. It's above what anything that's out there, and it's quick. And they can form sentences and tell you exactly what's going on.
Amazing, Robbie. Before we close, we've got 5 till the hour. Let's give out all of your information of how to be able to contact you and how to get your book, how to go to the event that's in October 2011. I know you've got everything on your website. Tom,
right.
Would you like to get that out for us?
Sure. Everybody can check out RobbieThomas.net. That's R-O-B-B-I-E, Thomas.net. There's a lot of information right there at hand. All my books are there, the movies I've been in, the event that's coming up in Halloween of 2011. It's going to be the biggest Parafest ever put forward.
Where is that going to be located again?
It'll be in Sarnia, Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
It borders Michigan, so you just cross the border, you're right there, and that's where it's going to be.
Can I ask you, is there a limit of how many people can attend to this event?
We are going to hold it to a limit, yes, because it's such a high prestigious show we're putting on that we're only allowing for the sit down dinner with the celebrities 200 tickets.
So you suggest that everyone get their tickets now, basically, instead of waiting around to the last.
Yes.
Robbie Thomas, it has been wonderful talking with you and hearing your voice once again. And I want to thank you with all my heart for enlightening so many active listening people out there, this going through the World Wide Web, and this will be archived on BBS Radio, Bright Lights Pathfinders, Kathy Cook, on your Friday, August the 27th, 2010. Robbie Thomas, if you could give us one feeling of what would you, there's so many things I want to ask you, but if you could give one person, I mean, they can take it how they want, to keep on their track and to know things are real with them, because you have taught so many people to go for their gifts. What would you say to the active listening audience about how you kept on track and did not let others, jealousy, others, envy, keep you down? You just kept right on going, and you knew not to doubt yourself. How can you give somebody some intuitive insight into how to keep pursuing their goals in the gifted world?
Yeah, you know, be true to yourself and everything else will fall in line.
That's perfect. To know thine own self, be true. Robbie,
absolutely.
With that, we're going to be off the air. And it's been an honor and a privilege. And it's always great to hear from you. Hope to hear from you again soon. You can catch Robbie on Facebook, and it's Robbie Thomas. He's on my Facebook as well, Kathy Cook, and he's all over the internet just searching. Go and look out and go and see all the things that Robbie's involved in. BBS Radio, we really appreciate you hosting the show. And with that, we are off the air. Goodbye, Robbie, and God bless you. And thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I will be taking life one octave, one broadcast at a time. Here on BBS Radio, Station 1, on Friday evenings at 8 o'clock Pacific Time. That's 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So listen up and tune in as we blend well together for all walks of listeners that have an open ear to hear and a pondering heart to feel with ease. This is Bright Lights Pathfinders, Kathy Cook.